on this episode of Optimal Health Uncovered.
Don't wait till you're thirsty. I mean, drink before. Each lesson I have with kids or adults, I always run by the cooler. I'm like, I grab a water for myself. I grab a water for them. And I'm like, let's drink this water. You got to drink the water during the lesson. That's part of the lesson. And they're like, look at me like, what? What are you talking about? But it's really important.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Optimal Health Uncovered. We're very excited to talk about golf today, one of our favorite topics, just in time for the Masters. So I'm excited to have two very special guests here. First introduction will be John Schmoll, assistant golf professional at Burning Tree Country Club. And John, I always, and we discussed ahead of time, I always hate introducing people who know far better about their careers and backgrounds than themselves. So why don't you go ahead and give us a little intro on yourself?
Thanks for having me. My name is John Schmoll. I work at Burning Tree Country Club. I'm the director of junior golf. I've been there for the past 8 years and really enjoy my job. Two-time U.S. Kids Top 50 instructor, and I'm going for number 3 this year, which would make me a master coach, which is on my goal list.
That's awesome. So we'll be rooting for you. We'll get further into what brought you into kind of juniors golf, because I'm really excited to start there. Mike, why don't we introduce you? So we have two mics. So just for clarity, I'm Mike Beecher. You're going to be Mike Szymanczyk, and unless you want to go by a different name, do you want an alias today or no?
I think I'm good for today. All right, I'm Mike Szymanczyk. I'm a physical therapist here. I've been here about 5 years, have my specialty in orthopedics, and then a couple of years of my career really developed this passion for golf fitness, golf training, so TPI medical and power certified clinician.
All right, so we'll get a little bit further into TPI model and just golf fitness, you know, devoid of dogma, because there's TaylorMade has their own, Nike has their own. TPI obviously has their own golf fitness academy and things of that nature. So we'll kind of make that make sense to the audience. But I wanted to start with John and just what got you into junior golf and what piques your interest and your passions there?
Sure. I've always enjoyed teaching juniors or working with them, coaching them, so to speak. I was a head pro for 20 years and kind of got worn out, tired, bored, or not maybe bored, but just needed a change. And Todd Wingerter had an opportunity for me at Burning Tree, and I've always wanted to get back down to the area. I started my career at the Sandwich Club right out of college. I worked there for 3 years and really enjoyed it. Worked with a lot of juniors there. And when the opportunity presented itself, I really jumped all over it and I've never looked back.
That's great. So Mike, I think this is a good opportunity just to introduce different levels of TPI. Again, this isn't a TPI promotion per se, but I think for the audience to really understand how the three of us kind of work together, fitness professionals, medical professionals, golf professionals. I think if we can kind of outline just the structure and the tier, Nike has a similar one, TaylorMade has a similar one. So just, you know, maybe broad strokes just so the listening audience can kind of understand that.
All right. So the TPI model, TPI stands for the Titleist Performance Institute. I know, John, you're familiar with it.
Yes.
Pretty intimately.
Yes.
So it's really like a screening process that the guys from TPI and the guys from like the FMS testing and some of these other big kind of physical therapy and training scopes put together of what are like the 15 test screens that we can assess that show what an efficient golf swing is, right? So looking at from a mobility and stability standpoint, what does the golfer need to have a true efficient golf swing? Now, this is all based on PGA norms, so for the most part, the amateur golfer isn't necessarily fitting into all these, but it's a way for fitness professionals, physical therapists, golf professionals to all kind of collaborate, speak the same language, but also kind of stay in our own lanes in terms of what we're assessing in the golf swing. So when I do a TPI evaluation, I'm looking at someone's swing, but I'm looking at it from a biomechanical movement standpoint, not necessarily from the like more golf-specific stuff that John's going to really look into. So it's really like a common framework for all of us to kind of play nice together, is the best way to put it, and stay in our lanes, but also get someone to golf the best way they can and actually like use their body in the best way they can.
All right, so that's a really good background. The easiest way that I make it make sense for clients, because they always ask, because they see something that's specific to golf and they say, can you help me fix my swing? I'm like, well, the biggest thing that TPI medical and fitness professionals can help your body do is give you the tools to optimally function within the golf swing. From there, there's going to be a level of coaching that we will not provide, that someone like John that can provide basically take those tools, optimize the efficiency of your swing, and then everyone collaborating, everyone succeeds. But from your end, there's probably been years of working with people where you're trying to tell them, hey, you're doing this with your hip, you're doing this with your hands, and maybe their body can't figure it out, and you're kind of banging your head against the wall. So whether it be TPI, whether it be TaylorMade, whether it be whomever got together, really the catalyst for change was Tiger Woods, you know, 20 some odd years ago of making golf a little bit more of a sport and addressing it as such. And, you know, obviously he's went different ways in his career. So he's bulked up and there's whole different avenues of what's right and what's not right. But one thing he did that I think is fundamentally hard to deny is he put a level of focus around fitness and golf specific fitness that was never there before and allows three of us to sit in a room today and talk about a topic that we're really passionate about and help people golf healthier, happier, and more efficiently. All right. So now let's go into just the yeah, level
actually,
specific to that.
I've actually been there if you want me to give you a little background on that.
Yeah.
I was a Titleist staff member and I was fortunate enough to get an invite to go to TPI at Oceanside there. And went through their programs back in the day when, you know, it was basically Greg David Phillips. Yeah. So I worked with David Phillips and both Greg Rose hands-on, which was amazing, and got to see, you know, a peek behind the curtain, which helped me a lot in my own game. And fast forward to today, last year, I was working with a trainer who was a TPI certified guy, Brandon Gadoris. I don't know if you know him. He was from the area. And he was a top 50 Golf Digest instructor. He got out of the business, unfortunately for me, and I kind of fell off the map. I didn't really do anything. And hence, you know, I hurt my back. Here I am with you guys. You know, thank God, you know, for Todd Wilkowski and his group here. We've got some outstanding people working here. So I actually got a screening from Brian, and Brian screened me, and now Patrick's working with me. So, you know, knock on wood, things are heading in the right direction for me personally.
That's great. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah. Similarly, my golf path, I'm a very high handicap golfer, so I'll put that out there. I'm probably the worst golfer in the room. Anyone who's played with me knows this. I'm getting to the point, speaking of juniors golf, that I think my 8-year-old is going to be starting to play this summer, which I'm really excited about because my biggest barrier right now is time. So if I can get her out there playing, I feel like I could actually put some time and dedication into my own game.
Super.
And accomplish both. Still be a good dad, but selfishly be able to golf a little bit more and a little bit more effectively. But I was always passionate about what the human body can do, hence why I became a physical therapist. And, you know, what Greg and his team put together at TPI is just a really nice product around matching the human body to something we're all passionate about, which is the golf swing. The golf swing kind of being the biomechanical pinnacle. Like there's so many different factors of what has to come together in sequence to hit a golf ball effectively. And there's no right way to do it. But when you get some of those people under 3D analysis, they do it very similarly. So they may look drastically different, right? But they under the microscope of 3D analysis, their body moves pretty similarly, which is pretty important. So just tired of seeing people injured, tired of seeing people have to work around deficiencies versus fixing the body and then working with someone like John to fix it. So that's kind of what brings us to the table. The junior golf is a little bit different in the sense that their human bodies are less faulty in terms of injuries, postural deficiencies, all the things that time and age kind of does to us. So what do you see different in those junior golfers and what's different in your approach maybe with them versus working in the older adults?
I kind of let them go. I just let juniors be juniors and let them have fun. I think the best juniors are the ones that are well-rounded, that play multiple sports. I mean, we found like, I think back to kids at Burning Tree. The best kids are the ones that are playing other sports, hockey, you name it, baseball, football, you know, anything. And then, you know, the golf part of it will come naturally. And then I'm there to kind of push them in the right direction. I don't really tell them per se what to do and how to do it. I kind of just guide them and let them go and let them be kids. And, you know, parents are always, you know, so protective of their kids and they want the best for their kids, of course. And being a parent myself, I can certainly understand that. But, I let them be kids and I let them enjoy themselves and remember that golf is fun, and that's why we're out there. We're out there to have some fun, and you know, their bodies are, like you said, much more flexible, and definitely pliable, which is great for me because then I can get them in the right direction.
Yeah. So my brain goes in many different directions. Let's start with the physical direction first. So when it comes to just one thing that I was really excited about when, you know, the TPI model put together some of its junior programming, it was based around just lifelong athletic development, and some of Istibal Bali's research. Who's a physiologist out of Canada that works with the Canadian Olympic teams. So basically, the without going too geeky into the science, just saying that in our growth and development, we have different windows. Where we have a speed window, we have a strength window, we have a power window. And if we allow those windows to close too soon by just early sports specialization, which I'll tee it up to you in a second, Mike, we can lead to all types of injuries and the things you see on the clinical side and mental side with burnout. But fundamentally, besides those things, injuries and burnout, you also will limit the individual's athletic potential. And especially in this area, in this country period, you know, we like to sports specialize very soon. Youth sports has become a bit of an industry. Everyone wants the best for their kids, well-intentioned, but you're trying to get kids into an Ivy League school from the moment they're born, right? So all these things that we deal with on a regular basis. But I think anytime I get a chance, whether it be in a microphone or a presentation, to speak just about not specializing too soon and speaking about how that individual has to rotate, how throwing a Frisbee is just as important sometimes as swinging a golf club and playing with their friends. There's so many different things that kids figure out intuitively, naturally, out there on the sports field in uninhibited play, just playing with each other, that they don't necessarily get when we deprive them of that by putting them in organized sports so soon. So I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but every opportunity I can, I'll say it. So with that, Mike, hearing that, on the physical side, what are you seeing from kids, you know, if they are specializing too soon? What are your signs, you know, if there's a listening audience and you're a parent well-intentioned saying, oh no, I may be doing this to my son or daughter. What are some signs and some warnings that are noticeable there?
Yeah, so with specializations, definitely like an issue we're seeing around here, and it's people kind of just hyper-focusing on that one sport. I think two big signs that I tend to look for is like repeated injuries, even like soft tissue injuries, right? A 12-year-old shouldn't be having back pain. That, and just if you can just see signs of burnout, even just psychologically, if these kids just don't, like John said, aren't having fun playing golf. If they're just playing golf because they're supposed to, and they're supposed to win, and they're supposed to do all this stuff for that, if they're not having fun, then they're really not going to get as much out of the sport, and they're definitely not going to go as far. If you talk to, like, I play collegiate sports. I know, Mike, you did. I know you've played golf and played in college. From that, like, you see the evidence of burnout, especially in college, of these kids that were stars going through high school. They get into, like, this later phase, collegiate, professional, and it's just too much. And really, if the passion's not there, they're not going to go as far as they really should be. One thing I like from the like TPI power model that they really go over that's really in depth is, and I think this is where choosing different sports and doing different movements really comes into play, is what they call the big break theory. And I explain this to everyone because this is really how you generate power. So if we're thinking about the golf swing or even just like throwing a ball, something that's a fast movement, your body isn't necessarily limited by how fast you can produce that movement, but it's limited by how much you can slow down that movement, right? So if you can't slow down a swing as hard as you can, your body's not going to take you to that level, right? So when we look at that, it's looking at, when I do training with people, we're not just training your downswing and working on how fast you can, whatever, how much force you can produce in your downswing. It's also, can you be strong in the opposite direction so your body can slow it down? Because that's really where we see the injuries, is on a deceleration standpoint where your body's trying to control movement that it hasn't been before. So I think that's where there's a lot of utility in playing soccer, baseball, lacrosse, things where there's a little bit more unpredictable movements compared to golf, where it is a very predictable, repeatable movement every single time.
Absolutely. Like you said, I mean, you have to learn how to break. I mean, it's all about speed, but you got to be able to use the brakes in order to get things going the right direction.
The other thing I love from their model, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on.
I totally agree. Yeah, that ADM, that American Development Model there, they talk about specialization at age 13 and above. And I think that's really important. I think you want them well-rounded at younger ages. You know, part of my camp in the summertime, we do relay races. It's amazing. You can't see, kids can't run. They can't throw. They can't jump. And you wonder why. And, you know, they need to be out there outside playing rather than being on the computer or on the iPhone or whatever, playing video games. I mean, that's really the thing that I see.
Yeah.
When we grew up, I mean, I was outside all day, every day until the lights, you know, basically came on, and then it's time to come home.
And John, how much are you telling that to parents when they're coming in? Because you get the typical type A parent coming in and they want to, maybe they're getting 4 lessons a week with you and they're going to take them in the morning to the putting green and the chipping green. Like, what are you telling parents of specifically, let's say, that 13 and younger athlete?
Part of it is let your kids fail. I mean, part of it is let them fail. Let them and deal with adversity. I mean, it's not all, you know, fun and games and rosy and you get trophies every day. You know, that whole trophy deal, this generation with trophies, it's crazy. You know, kids have to learn how to, you know, work hard at something and really grab it and take it rather than be given it, right? The whole, you know, you name it. What is it? The entitlement society. I guess that's where we're in.
Yeah.
So that's part of what I, and I, as far as talking to parents, I mean, I, talk to them a little bit, but it depends how well I know them. Of course, it's always tough to tell parents how to parent. But I always stress, hey, let the kids have fun and let them be kids. And remember, they're only whatever, 8, 10, 12 years old. So we've got to let them go a little bit and have some fun.
Yeah, I think framing the reward as the activity itself versus the reward being a trophy or a specific score or getting into a college at a higher level. I mean, the reward is the experience and having fun and loving what makes you passionate every single day to go out and just pick up a golf club is important. If they lose that, then fundamentally it's doomed from the start. And I think, you know, we were talking before kind of the mics got turned on of you seeing some of that burnout even before they're starting with you. You know, they're starting in a burnt out state. So from that standpoint, Mike talked a little bit about those signs of burnout. If you're seeing, what are your signs of burnout? Are you seeing just a disengaged, disinterested kid, an anxious kid? And then, and then what's your approaches? And we have a couple books on the table that I'd love to touch on. What are your tools to kind of deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to be prepared and read myself. And there's a great book by Chad Metcalf, who's a former Navy SEAL, that wrote about Young Athlete's Ultimate Guide to Mental Toughness. And basically the gist of the book is let the kids fail. Let him deal with adversity. I mean, when he was a SEAL, he was 150 pounds, like 5'8", and he's in there with world-class athletes, and he's looking around going, how am I going to compete? But it was more mental than physical, of course, and kids have to learn how to do that. And I think it's a great book. It's a great tool for a parent. It's Young Athlete's Ultimate Guide to Mental Toughness by Chad Metcalf, former Navy SEAL. So I suggest you should all get that and give it a read. It's great.
That's great. I think on the injury side, I can speak to it as a physical therapist and a TPI medical person. We tend to see people that the parents are asking more questions than the kids. The kids are less engaged in their rehab. You get them away from the parent and you're like, hey, you know, tell me a little bit. How do you like playing golf? Do you like playing tennis? Whatever the sport may be. And then, yeah, I used to, or not really. Right. So you by level of engagement, you can always see who's really passionate about getting back onto the course. Injuries sometimes don't always make sense at the youth population, but sometimes they don't make sense because they're a little bit manufactured. A little bit of pain turned into a more major injury, and it's just their avenue to just to be able to take a break because their parents aren't giving them a break. So that's an opportunity to educate the parents. To your point, you can't teach somebody how to parent. You can just say, hey, fundamentally, this is what I'm noticing as a professional, and I just wanted to make you aware of it. And most parents, I will say, in their defense, when you bring that to them, they had no idea they're doing what they're doing and that their child is feeling that pressure that they're kind of projecting on them. So it comes from a good place for most of the situations that I've dealt with. But, you know, you see those injuries manifest that once burnout's there. I do want to just call on, without being too self-promoting as a company, just the importance of a mental performance coach, period, sports psychologist, period, whether it be one of our individuals or anyone out there in the community. Huge resource that didn't exist, I don't think, when I was a kid, for sure. You just kind of grinned and bear it. And sometimes, you know, you do need somebody to talk to, and you do need to work through it outside of a coach, outside of anyone that has kind of a financial interest in your well-being as a professional, right? If you want that athlete to get to the next level, sometimes you need an unbiased third party, not a parent, not a golf professional, not someone like us. We need somebody that is just kind of an advocate for that child. So hugely important to get them on our team. Mike, in your experience, have you worked side by side with whether it be Adam or Ariana with golfers specifically, or just with any athletes that you can highlight for us?
Yeah, so it started to work with them a little bit more on the golf side, and I think it's starting to become a much broader subject and something that's more brought in the light recently. If John, I don't know if you've watched like the new season of Full Swing.
Yes.
So they do an entire episode about Wyndham Clark, who won the US Open last year, won a tournament right before that. Really for him up to that point, he was hothead golfer, throwing clubs, screaming, all this stuff, dealt with. His mom had passed away tragically. So there's a lot of stuff he was dealing with, a lot of baggage. Beginning of last season, his caddy, his family finally convinced him to hire a sports psychologist, this great woman. I'm blanking on her name right now, but she's
me too.
Amazing.
She's outstanding. Yeah, that was a great episode. That was one of my favorites of the whole series.
Yeah. So he starts working with her, develops all these strategies, controls his stress, controls even just stressors outside of the golf course, things that he was bringing into that. And he ended up winning two major tournaments, one big tournament, won the US Open, and this year has been consistent top 10.
It's been great.
Finisher.
Yeah.
Is one of, I don't know his world ranking off the bat, but I think that's a great example of this guy. It wasn't even public until this episode came out, really, that he had this sports psychologist coming with him on every trip. So I think it really highlights the importance.
Yeah.
And I think seeing it on that level of someone who is so high up and so advanced in their career, being humble enough to kind of bring themselves back and actually use that, I think it sets a great example. And I think that's where we can really take it with some of these kids. Of if you're seeing the professionals, right, all these guys have sports psychologists on retainer that they're using, especially the successful guys. I think more often than not, the guys that aren't winning aren't tapped into their mental game. Because at that level in the PGA Tour, physically, they're all capable. They're all capable of winning. It's that mental aspect, that's that last like 5% that's the key to winning.
And then you look at the other side of that whole series and Joel Damon.
Yeah.
Having trouble with, you know, alcohol and whatever. And he's having trouble with mental, you know, mental challenges. And they're trying to get him to work with somebody.
Right,
and
exactly.
He's resisting. And the other end of the spectrum there, Wyndham, he took it, you know, embraced it, and look where he is. Yeah. A lot of the guys on tour work with Brett McCabe. That's another book I brought here. It's entitled Kick Anxiety's Ass. This is probably Brett's fourth book. I've read them all. I'm working on this one right now, and this is a great book for parents and for kids about dealing with anxiety. Brett works with, among others, John Rahm, Sam Burns. I mean, he's got some pretty big names on his list there, and he's got some great podcasts too. So I would suggest checking him out as well.
Great resources there. Really happy that this has just been destigmatized. I mean, I think the biggest thing was, you know, talking to somebody before it becomes a problem. And that wasn't the case, you know, even 5 years ago. I think, you know, the explosion of just mental health and awareness around that is really important. And specifically not waiting till you have, you know, a diagnosis or something that you're really struggling with, trying to get ahead of it as just part of your game. So it's just like you have, you know, maybe a personal trainer, you have a physical therapist, you have a golf pro, you have a sports psychologist or a mental health coach on your team. Really important. I would take that team and put it in any sport, but specifically with golf, with it being such a huge mental game, it's really important. So we touched on something before that I just wanted to kind of circle back to, specifically time spent on golf, playing golf, versus time spent just being an athlete, just being a kid. So what is the breakout with, you know, how much golf should be practice, how much golf should be, you know, actually on the course playing around, and how much should just be, you know, being an athlete and kind of training for it in that youth group?
Yeah. In a typical lesson myself, I like to spend more time on the golf course than on the range or chipping or putting. I think the kids have to learn how to score. You got to learn how to get the ball in the hole, and there's multiple ways to do it. You don't have to do it, you know, cookie cutter like PGA Tour, watching them hit great shots. I mean, there's multiple ways of doing it. So I think for a kid to be out there learning how to play rather than just beating balls on the range all day, I think is a better way to spend time. And then they're much more, you know, apt to have fun and enjoy the day and enjoy being outside. I know kids, you know, that's part of the reason why they come and see me for lessons, because they know they're going to get on the golf course. I'm going to take them out there and I'm going to play some fun game with them. I'm going to play them for a shake at the snack bar or whatever, but I'm going to make it fun and they're going to enjoy it. And if they're not having fun, I'm going to say, why aren't you having fun? You know, and this is a great place to be. Isn't this better than being inside or whatever? And, you know, and then they actually open their eyes and they're like, wow, you know, this is pretty great to be out here. And I go, well, how lucky are you to be out, you know, and me, I get to work there. That's my office. So it's an amazing place to be. And kids see that. The more they're out there with me, the more they enjoy it. And, you know, they keep coming back. So that's a good thing.
Okay. Does your answer change at all with an adult? I mean, obviously they have jobs. They may not be able to be out there as much as the kids, but I guess we're entering in this part of the country into the golf season, right? Yes. From the practice season where most people are indoors, simulators, et cetera. So I think some people just go 0 to 100 where they're going out and they're just playing round after round because they're just excited to be out there. Mm-hmm. Similarly with an adult, how much should we be practicing?
I think you have to see where they stand up as far as competition goes. I mean, kids all want to play competition. So I like to see where they are. There's a new new app called Clipped, which I don't know if you guys have heard that, but they're really big in the industry now. All the college coaches are using it. It's a great way to diagnose stats and see where defaults are in the swing, in short game, you know, you name it. So I'm actually going to use that this year, and I'm going to encourage some of my juniors to do that. And it's a great way to prioritize practice because you can see where the deficiencies are, kind of like when you guys are doing assessments. I mean, you see where the deficiencies are in the body, and that's something to tackle. So this is a great way for me as a coach to see where the deficiencies are and go work on that. So we're going to do a little bit of playing, we're going to do a little practice, and then we're going to have focused practice based on what the deficiencies are.
Perfect. So similar question to you, Mike. we enter similarly a level of, hey, we're out there, we're able to play. I did all my training and my prep, now I'm just going to go play. But most professional athletes, most PGA Tour members, they're training during the golf season as well. So with recreational athletes, whether it be an older adult or juniors, there's still an opportunity to train for the activity that you're doing, right? So what's your guidance there? It's nice out. I want to go play 18 holes. I don't necessarily want to be in the gym as much, which is totally fair, but what's the balance point there?
Right, yeah. And I love talking to juniors and amateur golfers about this, of just how do we break out what your training season looks like? So I always find it funny that golfers kind of see themselves differently than other athletes in terms of like your baseball player, your football player, play soccer, even if you play tennis, right? You have an in-season and an off-season. There's kind of clear lines of you're doing different training in your off-season versus your in-season, right? So your off-season is really prepping for the season. If you're building strength, we're doing speed training. If there's any injuries, we're kind of clearing that up and treating those as they come. But it's a lot of power training, strength training, like ramping things up. And I think as you get into the season, yeah, your training frequency might go down, right? You might not be doing 2-3 days of like golf training in the gym, but maybe you're coming in once a week, once every other week. And really we're kind of just tapping into how you're feeling. What can we do to help maintain what we built over the off season? So whether that be from a mobility standpoint of, hey, your upper back's getting stiff, let's work through that. Let's just go through mobility drills that you're not necessarily straining your body too much, but we're allowing you to kind of access motion that you didn't have maybe, let's say, a year ago. And I think this is where a lot of the recovery stuff comes in too, of, all right, maybe you're not seeing me, but if you're playing, let's say like 3-4 rounds a week and you're playing heavily, like, all right, get a massage. Like, let's take care of your body and do what these professional athletes are doing, right? If a 30-something-year-old John Rahm who moves perfectly is getting massages every week, why are you at 50 who works at a desk 60 hours a week also not doing that, just trying to get on the course? So I think that's where it is kind of like educating them on that of, hey, these top guys are doing this and they move perfectly, right? If we look at your screen and we see red lights everywhere of where you're not moving, maybe you should be doing this because this is what led you down a path of injury or just inefficiencies within your swing.
I totally agree. That's secret sauce there. I get a massage once a week, whether I need it or not, but I love it. I mean, it's amazing, right? I had a lady that I worked with over the winter. She had like a big tournament schedule. She's like, I got to do well in this tournament. She got done. I think she did really well in 3 out of the 4 tournaments. She said, I'm exhausted. I said, go get a massage. She's like, really? I go, yeah. And she's like, you know what? That's a great idea. So yeah. Boom. I mean, it's there. And it
simple
works.
Thing, but yeah. If you overlook it, people tend to overlook it.
I don't know if we're the 3 experts on this, but I'm sure we each have, you know, something to add of value here. What food should we be eating on the golf course? So specifically, we talked about recovery and kind of fueling the body from an energy standpoint after whether it be resurgence with massage, Normatec, compression therapy, all those things. But on the course, specifically with long rounds, and specifically with the youth athlete who generally doesn't eat great, period. They're just eating snacks and they're on the course. What do you recommend ahead of time? What communication do you have, a nutritionist on staff? Like, what do you guys recommend there?
I tell the kids eat breakfast. It's a simple as
start.
That.
Yeah.
I had a girl actually who's really a great athlete, great swimmer. Given a lesson to her one morning. I don't know, 9 o'clock, and she actually literally passed out in my arms. And I could see it coming, and I grabbed her and brought her to the cart, gave her water. I'm like, did you eat breakfast? No. Why not? What are you doing? So anything. I mean, I'm not a big fruit eater, but, you know, fruit's always great for you. Yeah. I drink Athlete. It's a supplement that I put in my water, and it's really great as far as for my body, as far as it's anti-inflammation. There's a lot of properties in it that are really good. A lot of science went into it. I drink that on the golf course. I think it's tremendous. I eat walnuts out there, peanut butter sandwiches. I mean, Tiger Woods is peanut butter and banana. I mean, for Tiger Woods, if it works for him, what the heck?
Yeah, who are we to judge? What do you got, Mike?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I think, not to keep bringing it up, but if you watch around with John Rahm, he has in his bag, I think it's like 7 or 8 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches just in his bag. Right. So these guys are fueling too. Right. And I think the big difference with juniors too, and especially compared to professional golf or even like the amateur golfer, is if they're in competition, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're carrying their bag. Yeah. Right. So you add in a whole nother level of energy expenditure of, let's say, a kid who's 90 pounds soaking wet carrying a 45-pound bag for 18 holes for 4.5 hours, right? Your energy expenditure is going to be huge. Then you add on hot day, summer day, maybe you're down in Florida, right? Conditions you're just not used to. I think hydration is a big part of this too, mm-hmm. right? Of getting adequate water intake and like keep fueling throughout, and also getting in like electrolytes throughout the round.
Yes.
But I think that's the big difference, especially with youth golfers, is we can go out, we can say, hey, if I'm feeling like crap, I can take a cart out and I'll be fine. I can sit down every couple of minutes. Whereas they're A, in a competitive mode, and then B, also having to carry their clubs and kind of navigate everything on the course.
Yes. And don't wait till you're thirsty. I mean, drink before each lesson I have with kids or adults. I always run by the cooler. I'm like, I grab a water for myself. I grab a water for them. And I'm like, let's drink this water. You got to drink the water during the lesson. That's part of the lesson. And they're like, look at me like, what? What are you talking about? But it's really important.
All right. So let's get into speed training. It's something we touched on when we talked about lifelong athletic development, kind of that model. And it's very, very topical right now in golf. So from a speed training standpoint, Mike, let's talk about those windows of growth and development, maybe start from just the physiology of it and then just get into specifically recommendations that for young golfers.
Yeah. So I like the framework that, again, the TBI guys and even from the youth and power standpoint kind of put together, is that this throughout the lifespan, we have these different windows where we can kind of take advantage of physiologically what's going on in the body, right? So we have typically two big speed windows. Those speed windows are during periods of rapid growth, right? So our bones are growing at a really quick rate where this is first speed window being from like, let's say 3 to 8 years old, right? So bones are growing quicker. Muscles aren't necessarily keeping up. So when we have basically longer bones with tighter muscles, that allows us to really develop speed within that window. Let's go from like 8 to 13, right? There's kind of a little dead period, not growing as rapidly. That tends to be a little bit more of a strength window. And then from 13 to 18, 19, depending on that window of puberty, is another period of rapid growth where we can really start working on speed training. And I think the analogy that works best, and I think people get this, is in the power framework, they talk about rocket fuel, jet fuel, car fuel, and diesel fuel. So if you develop speed within that first speed window, right, throughout your life, you're going to have access to jet fuel, right? You can get to that next level, and your body has the capacity to be able to do it, right? Let's say from at a young age, you're not really interested in sports. You don't do as much of that, right? But then you start to develop speed, do different activities, sports. In that second speed window, you now have access to jet fuel. Maybe not as fast, not as explosive, but you can still reach that point. And so on throughout the lifespan. Or if you don't necessarily, if you weren't that active, maybe in your younger years, and then you pick up golf at 50, all right, now we know you're probably just going to be able to access kind of like diesel fuel, maybe not as much power production, but we can still work a lot with that. What I like kind of from that framework is like they heavily emphasize with the youth golfer from that 4 to 8 period, they don't even necessarily, like we talked about, don't even necessarily have to be playing golf. They can play soccer, baseball, t-ball, softball, lacrosse, anything within that, just things where they are trying to throw or hit something as fast as they can. So they're having fun and they're developing speed. The analogy I love to use that Greg Rose talks about is if he has a junior, right, let's say a 5-year-old girl that's on the range and her dad's sitting right behind her, has her hit a driver as hard as she can. It goes 100 yards, but it goes 60 degrees to the right. Her dad's kind of sitting there like, well, that wasn't good. And he's like, I'm there. I'm high-fiving her. I don't care where that thing goes. She just hit that so far with so much speed that that's really like the importance here. There's no really emphasis on accuracy in that first speed window. It's all about just developing speed. And then as they age and they develop more of these like fine motor skills, then the accuracy comes along. But if you kind of miss that window, it's really hard to get it back. I'm curious, John, what Absolutely. Like your experience with that?
Totally agree. When I grew up, it was like, okay, let's try to hit it in the fairway. And now it's like, let's see how hard you can hit it. And you look at the tour guys, I mean, they're all just bombing driver on every hole. So I'm telling the kids too, let's see how far we can hit it. And then we'll figure it out later. We'll try to get you in that window of getting in the fairway. And even if you don't hit the fairway, you got wedge in the green. So you can stop a wedge. I actually use the stack training system, which is a speed developed system by Marty Jertson, who works with Ping R&D, and Sasha McKenzie, who's a brilliant guy. And they've come up with an unbelievable app based system, multiple weights, multiple configurations, where it's actually AI based. So you go through a speed protocol where they're going to test you on where your baselines are, find out where that is. And then there's like 8 different program workouts in here based on what you do. And they're constantly changing and updating it. And I've picked up a lot. I mean, I'm like one of the fastest guys at 54 years old. I'm literally the fastest guy in the country. Actually, not to humble brag here, but there's a speed percentile deal on here, and I'm the guy.
That's great.
So, and I owe it to all of you here at Performance, and I owe it to this app, you know, to the stack. And I think it's phenomenal. And I've got kids doing this now, and I think it's it. I mean, this is the wave of the future here. Let's see how far we can hit it, right? Yeah.
So I think that touches on something that I think sometimes does get misconstrued. So these windows, we talk about these windows kind of closing a little bit. When we talk about a closing, you could still get somebody at 54 years of age increasing their speed and their proficiency because they've established a framework and the foundation younger in life. So I think one thing that I just wanted to point out is, you know, if people think, well, I missed that window, I'm screwed. That's not the case. So you've done things in those windows to optimize, or at least to get to a higher level. So the point of these windows is they don't close, you know, when they close forever, what we mean is you can never get that to that highest level, the most elite level, unless you're training appropriately during those windows. But it doesn't mean you cannot improve, because a lot of the improvement, if these tools are there because some level of training was done, or just some level of, you know, unorganized play out in the park with the kids, bring it back to the earlier conversation. We do a lot of the right things if our bodies just are allowed to do that and we're put in the right environments. So with that foundation in place, and then you add skill acquisition later in life, that's the recipe for success. I just wanted to point that out because I think sometimes people can get almost demoralized by the windows. Like, I missed it. I guess I'll never be fast. That's not the case. You may not be as fast as, you know, your counterpart who is doing the optimized training, but doesn't mean you can't improve, and you're proof positive.
Definitely
that,
two things that you want to watch there. Make sure you're in good shape. Make sure you work with somebody that can help you get in better shape rather than just jumping in here because you can hurt yourself. And I did last summer. Because I stopped working with the one trainer who got out of the business, and I continued to do the stack, and I hurt my back. So I'm proof that you got to watch what you're doing. I had to come, you know, go to PT and see Rob and, you know, get my back right and get myself stronger with Patrick before I, you know, now I'm jumping back in, and now I'm back where I was. And lucky for me, when I was growing up, my parents had me playing all kinds of sports. So I played literally everything growing up. So hopefully, you know, I hit maybe that jet fuel window where it's still there. And I'm tapping into it at age 54. So
I even just going off that, I know it's easy to recognize, like from your standpoint of the golf professional, if there's pain, you know, you're probably referring to a PT, a doctor, something like that. But let's say for like the less obvious things of someone who has a restriction that you're just trying to work and they can't get a certain motion, or that there just isn't pain, but you know, there's something else they can tap into, or like some need that they have that can be met with training, with something that we do. Like what things do you look for to say that you need to work on training, strength, power, speed, outside of just like pain where we need to get you in?
Yes.
To be seen.
I actually went to the level one TPI. So I have a little bit of a background, not quite like yours, to spot some of these things. And I always tell people, get an assessment, you know, come see you guys, get an assessment. I've talked about Brian, you know, to multiple members. And I think it's a really good thing. I mean, I think the assessment is the way to go. If you can do it, I think it's the best way to do, you know, get the assessment so they know where the lapses are in the swing in the body so that you can address it. You know, I'm not the guy that's going to help them with their body. So I'm going to point them. I'm going to really push them to you guys. Even though I've been the level one TPI, I'm not going to say, oh, let's work on your hip mobility. You know, let's do this. I'm not going to put myself there. I'll help them with their golf swing, but I'm going to help them, you know, find you and give them your number. Absolutely.
Well, the three of us can sit in this room and probably talk golf for 5 more hours, but I think we covered a lot. John, anything else for you to add?
No, I mean, the only thing I was going to say, when I grew up, we had a really good high school golf team. And two of the kids on the golf team only played golf. Their parents, you know, just drove them to play golf and practice, and it was crazy. And neither one of those two are playing golf right now. I can think of two other guys on my golf team, high school golf, who are two golf professionals along with myself. So we got three golf pros, and all those other guys played other sports. I played basketball, football, you know, baseball. The other guys, you know, played other sports too, football, you name it. And it's funny how, you know, when you look back, you see the patterns, you know, just like Greg Rose and all these guys have seen over the years. And And these patterns are there. Like guys like Dustin Johnson, they can dunk a basketball. I mean, you watch him throw a football. They did a photo shoot for, I forget what it was, TaylorMade or something. He's chucking balls like Aaron Rodgers on the range. Like, really? Huh? You know, and that's why he's so good, because they're great athletes. So I think it's athletes first, and then you specialize later.
All right. Thank you guys for your time. I really appreciate it. Hopefully the listening audience got something out of it. Obviously a topic that we're all very passionate about and can go on and on, but we'd be remiss if we didn't leave here without some Masters predictions. Mike, I did notice you mentioned John Rahm about 5 times today. Is he your go-to? Is that your prediction or what?
I've been told that's my golf doppelganger by every old guy on the golf course. So I'm going to ride with him. Go cool. Repeat.
There you go. I got to go with Rory, the sentimental favorite. He's got to complete the Grand Slam. Go for Rory.
All right, good. I'm going chalk. I'm going Brooks. I think he's the odds favorite. I was looking this morning. He's hard to beat right now.
That's a good one.
All right, well, John, thank you so much for being here. It was really an amazing conversation. Mike, thank you as well for being here.
Super.
Thank you for everyone for listening. Please tune in for another episode of Optimal Health Uncovered. More episodes coming soon.
Thank you.